This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by David Thibodeau. David's the founder and, I believe, managing partner of Wellvest Capital. He's had a magnificent career. Talk to him today about his fund, what he's seeing, what he's excited about, and a little bit more. David, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Absolutely, Scott. Thank you very much, and very much appreciate being part of this podcast, and looking forward to telling you a little bit about Wellvest Capital and our endeavors. I have gotten to where I am today at Wellvest Capital really over the last 30 years of a focus in the health and wellness space. And that is a space that I have became very interested in back, I hate to say this, but I think the mid-80s when I started a peanut butter company. And I learned quickly that peanut butter was a natural and a good for you food, not a bad for you food with a lot of fat in it. So that began my journey in health and wellness, actually. And over the years, in addition to being an entrepreneur, corporate strategy, investment banker and investor, I've just made it my mission to help companies that are helping change the healthcare cost paradigm in the U.S. by helping people live a healthier lifestyle. But my history of 10 years in investment banking at Adams, Harkness & Hill, we were purchased by Canaccord Genuity, was really instrumental, I think, in most of the bigger transactions done in the health and wellness space in the 20 to 2010 decade. And that's really when this industry came of age. And in the last decade, it actually accelerated quite aggressively with some very large and significant transactions. And now we're in a place where health and wellness is on the forefront of everyone's mind. So I'm excited to be part of it. I'm excited for Wellvest Capital, which is a independent sponsor and advisor in the health and wellness space. We bring a unique combination of talents to the table in any investment we're involved in or advisory project. So happy to go deeper into any of those subjects.
No, thank you so much, David. And I guess the first question, peanut butter, and I'm a lover of peanut butter. Do you look at the sugar counts on the peanut butter to decide whether it's healthy or not? Or is it 2 or 3 grams a serving, it's still okay? What's your sense? Because I got one person in the family who says, absolutely, we need the no sugar peanut butter. And of course, me, you know, who's more provincial, always likes the stuff that has some sugar in it. Any thoughts on that and how bad an issue or problem that is?
Well, I certainly don't want to open up a can of worms, but I have to tell you, sugar is a real health enemy. And we become more and more aware of that over the last many years. I would tell you, run as far and fast as you can from sugar. It doesn't mean that you can't have an occasional dessert or sweet, but really moderate it. The amount of sugar Americans eat on a daily, weekly, monthly basis is just way too high. And you know, I don't have the proper number for you, but I would really encourage you to use the all-natural peanut butter and eat that one with no sugar added. You'll learn pretty quickly you don't need it.
No, and I think that's good advice. And the all-natural one with no sugar added, it still has a little natural sugar in it, and then we'll move off the subject, I promise.
Well, it actually doesn't really have natural sugar, so it should be sugar-free. It does have good fats, and that's why it tastes so good. So it has better-for-you fats, meaning monounsaturated fats. So those fats are the kind of fats your body needs, not to mention the protein content of peanut butter as well. So overall, it's a really healthy food.
We're huge fans, and so I'll move a little bit more aggressively towards the no-sugar-added peanut butter, and I concur with you clearly on the sugar issue, no question. Talk a little bit about Wellvest Capital. What are you seeing today? What are the deals you're looking at? What are you most excited about? Talk a little bit about what you're seeing today.
So, boy, I have to say, in a perverse kind of way, 2020 has been a watershed year for companies in the health and wellness space. And when I talk about health and wellness, what I mean by that are products and services that help people live a healthier lifestyle. So we stop short of biotech companies, pharmaceutical companies, med tech companies. We're everything up until that point. So when we think about it and the way we define it as natural and organic food, beverages, personal care products, and household products. Vitamin, minerals, and supplements.
But let me ask a question about that natural category of food and drink. This is an area that's just exploding, isn't it? And how do you decide what deals you'd like to sponsor, invest in, and so forth? Because that's an area that's there's a new product in the beverage area in health and wellness. I assume almost daily, it seems like. And how do you decide what's likely to actually get shelf space, what's actually likely to get distributed, what's actually going to win versus just, you know, it be one of these millions of products that goes nowhere? How do you decide who to back and what to go after?
Traditionally, 90% of new products introduced fail. So the failure rate is huge. Unlike some other industries, there's generally not IP protection around the ingredients. That's not always the case, but quite often it can be. So you really have to understand how well that product is accepted by their core consumer base. And does it have an opportunity? Does it have legs outside of that core consumer base? And that is the way we look at it. We really draw on our years and years of experience around branding companies and understanding what really resonates with consumers and what will resonate with broad consumers. So, you know, we're not interested in companies that are just going to do $5, $10, $15 million worth of business. We'd like to see companies that are doing several hundred million plus of business. So it really, it takes time to build a strong brand. It takes a clear brand position within that audience. And we're seeing that day in, day out now as more and more people have decided that it's time to take control of their health by changing their eating habits, by taking vitamin minerals and supplements, by exercising. Those are really important factors in people controlling their own health.
If companies want to be the scale that you talk about, and you see some of these that self-distribute in different kinds of ways, but to really get the scale you're talking about, they ultimately have to get into distribution arrangements with either the Walmarts, the GNCs, the Targets, grocery stores. Don't they? Are there other options to really grow a brand and a product in these categories without major retail help, without major distribution help?
Ultimately, 85% of products, goods and services, or goods are sold through traditional retail outlets. The digital world is changing, and it's changing rapidly. It's changing how we can bring products to the market. Many of our companies, whether they're portfolio companies, companies that we are advising, are really taking advantage of the opportunity to launch products on the internet and launch them digitally first, create a brand presence, create a following, and then taking that information and that data to retailers who ultimately will make a decision. Do we want to bring this product in? Is it accretive to our category? Is it bringing a new customer into our retailer, into our locations? Those are really important factors. So now, more than any time in history, it's easier to launch a brand. But you can launch it, but to make that brand really, really hum, it does take hard work and resonating with your demographic, your audience, your consumer. So that really, really important.
But your point is well taken. Self-launching can be done, very, very important to gaining a foothold, getting a beachhead. But ultimately, that's usually a step towards getting into major retailers. And it's also a step to at least have some optionality, not to be so totally dependent upon the big retailers. But to really scale, it's still hard to avoid getting through the big retail channels. Talk a little bit about health and wellness products, like the world of an independent sponsor, from your own entrepreneur to investment banker to doing some work as an independent sponsor plus advising. Talk about that jump to independent sponsorship and the excitement in that.
So it's an interesting road I took, because we were looking at raising a fund, but one of the issues that we ran up against was when you create a fund, you have specific investment criteria that you're pitching to the LPs. And it's awfully hard to operate outside of that box. And the industry we're playing in is changing so rapidly, and there's so many interesting opportunities and opportunities up and down the value chain, that the independent sponsor model allows us to be much more flexible. There may be a capital partner who's more interested in the manufacturing or the ingredients behind these products, but has zero interest in the brand. There may be another capital partner that's more interested in the branded business and understands that. And so they won't invest in the back end. They want to invest in the front end. So it gives us a whole lot of flexibility. And we're finding, at least now, and we're excited about a first deal we're working on. And we hope to have that close in the next couple of months, but it's an exciting opportunity for us, really leveraging all of Wellvest's capabilities on the strategic, on the operating, and the execution side.
It must be very exciting for you what you're doing. I mean, you must really love this.
Absolutely. Our mission is to really change the healthcare cost, or the sick care, as I like to call it, cost paradigm in the U.S. And our companies are having a significant impact. 2020 really accelerated the growth of this industry. It was like what I call a BOGO, buy one, get one free, but we didn't have to pay for it as an industry. People came into our category in droves. They wanted immunity products. They wanted healthier food and beverage products. They wanted to take control of their health. So we are so excited about where this industry is going. We think there's going to be incredible opportunities in the wearable area, where wearables are giving feedback to individuals in how they're doing in their health and wellness journey. Personalization based on your DNA, blood markers, microbiome discoveries. So much of who we are and what's happening with our health starts in the gut. So the more we understand about that, the more we can control that, the better off we're gonna be. And then the next generation of healthier foods, alternatives to milk, alternatives to classic soda that's full of sugar, opportunities in plant-based meats that actually can be better for you.
Absolutely. A couple questions along those. Is there a wearable that you personally used? I mean, is it an Apple Watch? Is it a Fitbit? Is it a Whoop or one of these things? Is there a wearable that you love personally? Anything you're particularly excited about?
Well, I have to say I'm a big fan of Garmin. So I have a Garmin Vitex 5, which monitors all kinds of great health attributes for me. And I'm particularly interested in where my heart rate is going when I'm exercising, how long it's at certain levels. And so to me, that's really, really important. I'm probably at the core. Well, not probably. I'm at the core of, if you think about the overall population as a bullseye, I'm in the middle of that Bullseye, and I use wearables to help me do better every day. And ultimately, wearables are going to help us sleep better. They're going to help us determine what type of foods we should eat, what type of supplements we should take. So as this, as these wearables really start to advance, it'll be really incredible. They'll be indispensable pieces of how we manage our health.
Thank you. Very helpful. Plant-based meats. You know, sometimes you go to a restaurant, they're magnificent. I, for the life of me, have not yet been able to fall in love yet with the Beyond Meat stuff at home and other kinds of stuff at home. What plant-based meats anything that you love that you would say, you know, you're missing the point if you're not trying this type of plant-based meat?
So I have been eating plant-based, what have previously been called meat alternatives for years, starting with Light Life Foods back in the 90s. I don't eat it exclusively, mind you. I do like steak. I do like pork. I do like lamb. So, but I do mix up my intake through incorporating various plant-based meat alternatives and protein alternatives. So, for example, pasta. You can get pasta now made with garbanzo beans and chickpeas that have a very high content of protein. So it's a much better alternative than a full high carbohydrate laden plate of pasta. So those types of opportunities, Beyond Meat, yeah, it's a great product. I think there's going to be more work to be done. You know, they're working hard on it. It's getting better every day. There are all their alternatives, as well as Impossible Foods has a good product. So there are many, many products out there. The key is to try them and figure out which ones you really like.
Right. And some of them work well. If I put them on the grill and burn the heck out of them, then they taste okay. But no, I think that it's a constant evolution with the Beyond Meats and Impossible Foods. I mean, the Impossible Burgers. I mean, the challenge with those, of course, is if you try them, you don't like them, it could take a year or two till you're willing to try it again. But then there are, of course, veggie burgers at places that are magnificent. But the true pretending to be meat alternatives, sometimes are magnificent and sometimes are just awful. And it's trying to hit that right line. And I guess if you were deciding what to invest in and judge, you have to look at, you know, I guess that would be a taste test. If you taste it and it's horrible, you probably must think this probably doesn't have a lot of legs, does it?
Exactly. Taste is number one. I mean, it goes back to the can of my days at Adams Hartness. You know, the good news about MySpace is we get a lot of product samples. The bad news is not all those product samples taste good. And so the guys from the tech group or the biotech group would come by and want to taste stuff. And I would allow them to taste stuff. But I said, you got to taste the good with the bad. You know, not everything that comes through my desk tastes good. So taste is king. You have to have the taste profile. And so
you have to like it. If it's just healthy, but you can't stand it, then it doesn't work. So these companies are constantly evolving, constantly getting better. I do remember the first time one of our colleagues brought over one of these types of burgers, and I want to, you know, irritate Beyond Meats or Impossible Foods, but the first time they did it, it was just absolutely awful. And I know it's gotten better, and I know they keep on working, and I know it's getting better, but it took a while to retry those kinds of burgers or foods. But it really is a fascinating area. But I have to tell you, David, what a pleasure to visit with you. No relation to Tom Thibodeau, I take it.
No, unfortunately not.
That's okay. Nope. But what a pleasure to visit with you. And what a remarkable career you've carved out for yourself, from, you know, peanut butter entrepreneur and advisor to investment banker to independent sponsor and advisor. What a magnificent career. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you joining us today on the Becker Private Equity Podcast. What a pleasure to visit with you. Thank you very much.
Scott, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And any questions on health and wellness, don't hesitate to call me.
Well, Vest Capital, folks, thank you so much, David, for joining us. What a pleasure.